Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Swinging a line drive left field. Benintendi coming on, dives, and did he make the catch? He did! He got it!
Here we go. It's time to party. Right here. 3-2.
High drive! He crushed it! It's a grand slam!
Swing and a miss, thankfully, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome to Benny and the Bets Podcast.
Can you believe it?
Here's your host, Terry Cushman.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. Thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. We have a lot of Red Sox-related topics to discuss. If you haven't checked out part one or part two of my interview with Porter Fisher, be sure to do that. He was the whistleblower for the Alex Rodriguez Biogenesis scandal. Both interviews are, both parts are very fascinating. Part two has a lot of the, the intense details of the immediate aftermath of, the initial report dropping. And I would encourage everyone to listen to that, you know, before things get hot and heavy here with the season. So joining me tonight, as always, Andrew Dwan, and then coming off the bench tonight, Aaron Graves. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing well. How about you guys?
I'm doing real well.
Good.
And Aaron's been on at least two or three episodes, I think, and I'll just kind of rehash it again. We kind of met under kind of cool circumstances. We were both in Ireland. We'd never met previously, and we happened to be on the same ferry boat getting ready to go to the Aran Islands, which are a small chain of islands off the western coast of Ireland. And I overheard your mom saying, you were from Maine or whatever. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, you know, we're from Maine. You know, my girlfriend and I'm like, whereabouts? And you said, Wyndham. And I'm like, I graduated from Wyndham in 2001. And, we kind of ventured out separately, you know, through the islands. Then on the way back, you know, you were talking Sea Dogs with me. And I know Dahlbeck was down there and, one or two other prospects, probably Feltman. And we were talking about them, and I'm like, do you listen to, you know, baseball podcasts? And Aaron's like, yeah. I'm like, have you ever heard of the Benny and the Bets podcast? And he's like, yeah, I have. And I'm like, well, I'm the host of it, you know? So, you know, on a little tiny boat off the coast of Ireland, like, that's where I met my first listener, you know what I mean? That's just the craziest story ever. So,
yeah, totally expected when, you know, you go overseas and you just happen to find someone from the same small town. And yeah, you always expect that to happen.
Just being from the same town all in of its own was cool. But yeah, so we're happy to have you tonight with us, Aaron. And, you know, hopefully, you know, several times throughout the season.
I appreciate whenever you guys have me on. So thank you.
Yeah. All good. So, a very roller coaster week with Chris Sale 2 days ago. Had some elbow soreness, as it was described. Had an MRI done. It was sent out to not one, not two, but three doctors. And two of them, one was Dr. How can I forget this guy's name? Dr. Andrews. And then Dr. Elitracci, who is apparently affiliated with the Dodgers organization, took a look at the MRI as well. And I don't know who the third doctor was, but they did get three opinions. And none of them came to the conclusion that he would need Tommy John surgery, which really shocked me. I mean, I thought it was a foregone conclusion at this point that he would have that done. But, so they say he doesn't need it at this point. And I'm using air quotes, even though there's no camera on me right now. At this point. And, you know, just a lot of cautious rhetoric around him not needing it. And then it comes out today that he probably, well, not probably, but it's very much a possibility because he has a strained flexor tendon. And I was looking at diagrams on Google Images trying to get the layout of the elbow. I know where the UCL is, but I've never really known where the flexor tendon is. And I still don't, because there was a lot of fancy words on there. And flexor was on there a bunch of times. So, but it's a common injury. We see it all the time. And it often does lead to Tommy John surgery. And, I mean, if you guys know of an example, please mention one. But I've never heard of a pitcher having a strained flexor tendon and then recovering in the same season and pitching well. I mean, can you guys think of anyone off the top of your head?
No, I really can't off the top of my head. And I think at this point they're just kind of – it's just a last-ditch hope that maybe things will heal up. Obviously, when you send an MRI to three doctors, you're kind of looking at a grim outcome. But – yeah, I think even Sale kind of alluded to it where he pretty much said he'd know for sure if he's going to need TJ in about 2 to 3 weeks. So I think that's the timetable we're looking at. And you got to feel bad for the guy. I mean, he's one of those guys. He's just he's a baller. So he wants to go out and take the mound every 5 days. So I really do feel bad for him because he knows he's eating him up inside.
Aaron?
I could be wrong, but was the flexor tendon the issue that Tanaka had a couple of years ago where they said for like 2 years in a row he was right on the verge of needing Tommy John surgery?
No, his was his UCL. He had damage to it after the 2014 season and then had the PRP injections, which Sale did have last September, but Tanaka has mostly recovered. I mean, his injuries, I think, have varied. You know, 1 year, didn't he strain two quad muscles running to first base in a National League game or something? And I don't think they've been definitely, all elbow related. But it does seem like, you know, there's always this expectation that maybe this is the year that Tanaka will finally need the surgery, and it never happens. And for the most part, he pitches well down the stretch and pretty well in the postseason. He got roughed up in his second start against the Astros, completely shut them down in game one of the ALCS, but I don't remember how many runs he got tagged with, but they were playing the Astros, so who knows what they were up to. But
yeah, well, you also have to think that Tanaka having more of a normal delivery than Chris Sale kind of helps him from reaching the point of no return with that elbow as well. I mean, Keith Law, I think it was Keith Law years ago when Sale was coming out, said he was going to be a reliever just because of that arm motion, and pretty much said it was never going to hold up, and obviously held up longer than some experts expected. But when you're throwing like Sale and not like Tanaka, eventually everything's just going to be a mess inside that elbow.
I totally agree with you. There's just the way he throws the ball. Ever since he came up with the White Sox, I knew that Tommy John was eventually going to happen, and he keeps putting it off and putting it off. And I'm not sure if it's the best idea, but the Red Sox and him clearly think that it's the best option for now.
Yeah, well, another thing that keeps getting mentioned is that there's no change to his UCL. So does that mean it's still slightly damaged, or was there a clean MRI that wasn't reported and there's no changes from that MRI? I guess I'm just not clear exactly if the PRP injections actually worked.
Yeah, I have no idea about that. I did see someone on Twitter earlier mentioning just with these x-rays that their every pitcher, every elbow is just a mess when you look at an x-ray or an MRI. So it can kind of be a little difficult to determine just about how damaged it truly is from where it had been in the first place. So you could look at an MRI and be like, oh, wow, it's messed up. But it's like, that same guy might not have any issues. That's just how it is after years and years and thousands of pitches worth of abuse on that arm.
Yeah, and I mean, damage to the UCL, strained flexor tendon, I mean, I just can't see any other alternative here than having Tommy John. And if he has it next week or the week after, he's going to be shut down for at least a week. So we're at least a couple of weeks away from surgery, if not, you know, maybe even close to a month. That's going to keep him out until next July or August.
Yeah.
So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I kind of beat up on the whole timeline of us signing him, you know, in the last episode, and I was pretty scatterbrained about it. But, you know, it was a mistake to sign him a year early, and the Red Sox have literally botched every aspect of managing him, you know, since the injuries cropped up. And, you know, had they not signed him early, then he's on a 1-year prove it deal at best. It, you know, maybe he fails a physical and doesn't even have a contract right now. I mean, who knows? I mean, he started having discomfort on his first live session against hitters after 6 months of rest. You know, and it only took one batting practice session for all of this to crop up. So I guess what I'm getting at here is we have to live with the fact that we did sign him early. And when he went down with the initial injury last fall, you probably should have just had the Tommy John at that point, and then he would have been good to go probably opening day 2021. So just every step along the way has been botched, I think, by the Red Sox.
Yeah, obviously there's no way of telling, but I would love to know that what his course of action would have been had he not signed the long-term deal prior to last season. Would he have shut it down earlier if he knew he was entering free agency and not wanting to risk further damage on that arm? Maybe get surgery then and hit the market 1 year before, or well, recovering right about now or 2 months in, and see if he could sign a big contract then or a 1 year prove it deal. I'd be really, really interested to see what he would have done had Dombrowski not opened the wallet for him.
I'm also very intrigued on that one. I agree with Terry also on the fact that the Red Sox have completely botched this entire thing since the beginning. And if you really wanted to look back at it, you could have seen it coming in the World Series year playoffs. He missed starts against the Astros. He missed a start against the Dodgers, and he was really only useful for that final inning to clinch the game. And honestly, I'm not even sure if he was the best one for that, if it was just more of the fact that it's Chris Sale and he was the ace of that staff.
Yeah, I mean, he could not locate his fastball at all throughout the playoffs that year. He was very slider heavy, and I don't know if maybe that was part of it. You know, why he just didn't get off to such a great start in 2019. But and sliders aren't good for your arm. But yeah, I mean, and they went to Kimbrel was not good though. So I mean, maybe damaged Chris Sale even in that final inning was probably with a 3 or 4 run lead the best option. But just it's just utterly frustrating. And with the money aspect of the deal, you know, everybody praised Chris Sale. Oh, he loves Boston and he's committing to us. You know, kind of like how, you know, Yelich just did with the Brewers, even though he's a position player, and you know, Arenado last winter. But with Chris Sale, I think there was a little bit of motive. I think he's like, I need to get a contract now because, you know, I'm not pitching as well as I was in 2016, 2017. And, you know, it would have been really risky to have to pitch another season, which would have been his final option year, you know, without already being locked up to a contract. So I think when they did offer him the 5 years, $150 million, I think that was a relief. And just think about this for a second. I mean, if with Chris Sale completely healthy at his best and then Gerrit Cole completely healthy at his best, they're the same age. I mean, they're both nasty, aren't they? I mean, they're both game one World Series starters, you know, if the rotation lines up that way. Yet Cole got 324 over 9 years, Chris Sale 150 over, you know, 5. So he just wanted the best deal he could get, you know, as sort of an insurance policy. And he got it. And, you know, saying that he loved Boston was nice, but I just think there was an ulterior there.
Yeah, he was obviously hedging his bets a little bit when it came to health. I had been on a couple different Sox boards after the World Series and kind of threw out the idea to see how other people felt about it, where I was mentioning that I wouldn't have been too upset if they quietly shopped him. Obviously not leaking anything out to the media, but just calling maybe one or two GMs that might have been looking for pitching and a guy that was going to be on a 1 year, $15 million deal. And just, you know, just kick the tires on what you could have gotten back. Because obviously at that point, the trade was worth it. You got a World Series out of them, and it really only cost you Moncada, who actually had a lot better news than Sale did today. But yeah, I don't blame Sale for signing the deal. If someone put $150 million in front of me and I knew my elbow was probably not going to hold up through that 5 years, I'm signing it every time.
Absolutely. On sales side, the business was done really well. Him and his agent, the Red Sox gave him the offer, and there was no doubt in my mind what was going through his head, and this is a great opportunity for me because I know my elbow is messed up, and I know this is guaranteed money that I probably wouldn't get otherwise.
Yeah, and I mean, at this point, he's probably going to have the surgery. You know, we can hope that next year we're at least contending for a wild card. We're going to be able to spend some money. The, you know, starting pitching market isn't great, but if Tanner Houck comes up and ends up being a middle of the rotation guy, every time I hear Brian Mata's name brought up, people are just continue to rave over him. So I'm not sure where the ceiling is. It sounds like it's closer to the top of the rotation. It sounds like he could be with the big league club next season at some point, maybe, you know, middle to late spring. And so you got two guys there. You still got E-Rod. You're hoping for the best with Evaldi. You might get Sale back in the summer, and you can probably make one free agent signing over the winter, you know, whether that's Trevor Bauer, Jake Odorizzi. I know there's at least one or two other names, no one, you know, of the Gerrit Cole, you know, caliber, but some serviceable guys. And that's the best case scenario here. Now, let me bring up one thing, and I tweeted this yesterday, and it kind of haunts me a little bit. Justin Masterson is 6 feet, 6 inches tall, had a funky delivery. He was a righty, though. His career ended at 30 years old. Chris Sale is also 6 feet, 6 inches tall, has a funky delivery, and is 30 years old. So they're of different pedigrees. I'm not saying Justin Masterson is as good as Chris Sale, because he definitely wasn't. But, you know, they both have these big frames with mechanics that just couldn't sustain them. So I hope we're not going down Justin Masterson Avenue right now, basically.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fantastic. No, I think worst case scenario with Sale, he misses this year. You get him back next July. Obviously, you're not going to rush him. I don't see why they ever would. I don't know. He just seems to me like he's, you know, cut from a different cloth than a lot of these guys, where I feel like it's going to kill him to be out, and that they're going to have to hold him back from trying to push himself too hard in rehab. I still have faith in him to get to 80% maybe where he was, and that's still a really good pitcher. If you got a guy in the mid to high threes when he comes back. So I'm not too nervous. Obviously, I'm kind of throwing the towel in for a year and a half at this point, but I do think he's going to be able to battle back. I don't think we're looking at a guy that's just going to, you know, crap the bed and, you know, you get like a Barry Zito in San Francisco contracts and situation going.
Hopefully not. And by the time he does come back, he's got 3.5 years left on it. And if he can give you two really solid years, you know, I guess you would take that. You know, that would be salvaging it.
I mean, God, thank God Dombrowski didn't give him a 7-year deal.
Oh, jeez.
I bet he even offered it too. And Chris Sale's like, nah, you know what? 5's good. He's like, are you sure you don't want the 7?
Yeah.
Your option for an 8.
We'd be having a completely different conversation if that were the case about the Red Sox having 6 years down the road, just going to be abysmal.
Oh, I wouldn't have needed a haircut today. I would have already pulled it all out if that was the case.
Yeah. If you want to kind of draw up a similar contract, in fairly recent history, when we got John Lackey, I think he was damaged goods right from the start.
He wasn't healthy.
Yeah, he was coming off a very good 2009 with the Angels, and they actually swept us in the playoffs. And, you know, I think that's when Epstein kind of honed in on him as a potential, you know, target to sign. But he wasn't good in 2010 and spent some time on the DL in 2011. And by the end of the year, they determined, okay, you know, Tommy John. And then, so he was out the entire 2012 season, which was the Bobby Valentine year. We were last place, and then came back in 2013, was ready to go right away. And
yeah, he had a good year that year.
Yeah, and we won the World Series, and he was a good teammate throughout the playoffs, because he was a villain like the whole time he was here coming into that season. You know, he had a couple of media meltdowns, but he had a very solid 2013. Came out of the bullpen a couple of times in the playoffs, and then he pitched game 6 against the Cardinals and sealed the deal. So, you know, maybe Sale's contract, you know, is going to take that trajectory. I mean, who knows? But that's just another example that came to mind. Any final thoughts on him?
No, just hoping for the best, and you know, who knows? Maybe something will happen, and we'll see Chris Sale this year. But yeah, just fingers crossed.
If I'm being honest, I was kind of hoping that we were going to find out that he did need Tommy John, so that we can figure it out now instead of in July, so that we'd be more ready for opening day next year than July, but.
Yeah, well, he could
overall, I think it'll work out.
he could be a handful of days from having it, but the typical time frame is 12 to 18 months. And I just think with his delivery and the fact that you're dealing with multiple areas of the elbow, I think he's going to be on the longer end of that, probably 16 to 18 months is what I would guess. But it's got to get done if we want to try to salvage some of that deal. So this morning, well, last episode, we, Charlie, Jason, and I had a list of candidates. Let's see if I still have it. I do. And here are some of the candidates we talked about. Clay Buchholz, Andrew Cashner, Marco Estrada, Matt Harvey, Jeremy Hellickson, Colin McHugh, who we're definitely going to get to here, Danny Salazar, Aaron Sanchez, Scott Kazmir, and I had Taiwan Walker on the list, but apparently he's in Mariners camp, so he wouldn't be...
Yeah, he went back there.
He wouldn't be signable. But we were able to kind of, through a little bit of research, eliminate Hellickson. He retired due to a setback with his shoulder. We kind of felt like Marco Estrada and Aaron Sanchez wouldn't be really viable because they're not going to be ready until early to mid-summer. And, I mean, if we don't get someone now, we're going to be dead by then as far as the playoffs go. So they weren't really potential targets. Clay Buchholz, I mean, would you guys want a Buchholz reunion?
Maybe like 7 years ago, but not now.
Yeah. I said in the last episode, I said Buchholz would be viable if Sale was just going to miss a month or two. Then maybe you could use Buchholz to get you, you know, to when Sale comes back. But, you know, obviously that's not even going to be the scenario. So, you know, Colin McHugh, we liked. Matt Harvey, if he's in game shape, there's no... I tried looking that up. Who knows really what kind of shape he's in, like if he could come to camp and kind of hit the ground running. So, you know, we weren't really sure about him, but, you know, he's going to be on a lot of teams' radars if he is, in fact, viable. And then I kind of liked Andrew Cashner, not because he's a sexy name, but a little bit of familiarity, and we know he's healthy. So,
man, I had enough of Cashner last year. Yeah, that was just failed experiment. That was not prime Baltimore, Andrew Cashner, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, as a reliever, he was okay, but what was that, Aaron?
I was going to agree with Andrew, and I had absolutely no interest in bringing Andrew Cashner back. I saw enough of that when I watched his debut at Fenway.
Yeah, well, he definitely wasn't good right out of the gates. But, I mean, the theme of this list is there's, you know, not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of healthy candidates on it, so...
Yeah, you know, I'm a little offended. You guys didn't, you left out one big name. Oh. Bartolo Colon.
Oh, we did. Yes. And why not kick the tires? I mean, he's durable, you know, maybe he can give you 4 or 5 innings.
Yeah. A little reunion with him. What year did we have him? Was that like 2008?
Yeah.
He was on there for a second.
Yeah. That's when it was. Yeah. That dude was a freak. He had a perfect game going against the Astros, I think the season before last. It was on Sunday Night Baseball, and he got it into the seventh inning. And I don't think I jinxed him because I didn't use his name, but I did a cryptic tweet saying, if it happens, it will never be broken, because he's 45 years old. Who's the next guy? Who's the next guy who might have a chance? Maybe Verlander. I don't know how long Scherzer wants to pitch. Verlander says he wants to pitch till he's 45. So I don't know if this offseason might have aged him 10 years, but that's what he's...
Yeah, we'll see now that they're inspecting the balls if he's going to last till 45.
Yeah, and you know what? not to get too random, but... we were joking in the group chat how Garrett Cole just utterly got killed today, mostly by Cabrera. But if they are looking at the balls, and Trevor Bauer had this theory that the Astros were doctoring them with some type of substance. One of them was Coca-Cola, and it mixed in with something else. It was very scientific. But if they were doctoring it, you know, we'll know by looking at his slider. If his slider isn't 87 to 89 like it was all last year, that's going to be kind of interesting. And I'm just wondering how dominant Cole's really going to be in that ballpark.
Maybe he's on to something. Maybe he can't check the balls if the guy's hitting 500 feet out of the ballpark, you know?
Right. Absolutely. So I just, yeah. So, well, you said with Verlander, let's see if he, you know, if he can pitch that long with these balls. But anyway, so I kind of got off topic there. But of all the names on this list, Colin McHugh was signed today by the Red Sox. It's mm-hmm. a very incentive-laden contract. He's going to have a base salary of, I think, $650,000. So basically, that's probably the major league minimum. And then there's incentives in there. I did not get exactly what they were, but the contract could be worth up to $3.6 million if he, you know, reaches those incentives, whether it's X number of innings or whatever, or appearances. So, you know, it's a very affordable contract, but he was shut down last year with a flexor strain, much like Chris Sale is going through. He had something called a tenex procedure. I've never heard of that. But he did have that done to his elbow. He hasn't started a throwing program. Apparently, he auditioned for some teams. The Red Sox must have been there because they signed him. But he's not ready yet. And I'm guessing he probably, I mean, if he starts a throwing program tomorrow, he's probably not going to be ready till mid to late April at the earliest. And I guess it's just going to depend on, is he going to start as a reliever, because he has been a reliever, I think, for the last three seasons.
At least the last two, he's been a full-time reliever. Especially, I think it started in 2018. That's when they moved him to the pen full-time.
And he had a dominant year that year, 58 appearances with a 1.99 ERA. So, pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, if they can get that, that's great. Who knows what they end up using him as. If they use him as a starter, I kind of think the opener role is probably out of the question now that, you know, they're down one main guy. So yeah, whatever you're going to get from him is great. He's got a great slider. So who knows? It's a great risk. It's only $650,000. Obviously, if it's not working out, they'll just cut bait. So. Yeah, I'm a huge fan. It literally, there's no risk whatsoever, unless he just came in and tore the clubhouse apart. But obviously, that's not going to happen. So yeah, really good move by Bloom.
I also really like it. I really liked McHugh in Houston, both 2017 and 2018. I want to say, I don't fully recall, but I think he made 10 or 11 starts last year. I don't know if it was out of the opener role or if he was actually a legitimate starter, but
I don't think he might have made one or two early, and I think most of his appearances after May were all reliever related. I'm trying to get his game logs up. Oh, here we go. Yeah, I'm more familiar with Fangraphs. I'm on Baseball Reference right now.
Yeah, his starts all came at from March to May, and then they moved him over
to the pen. Yeah, and he didn't have a great year last year. You know, 4.70 ERA, but he has had some pretty solid years in you know, relief and starting roles. So. I'm a little concerned with his injury because, like I said, that's typically not something that guys simply bounce back from without having Tommy John. He is 32 years old, But there was a procedure done, so maybe that was adequate. I mean, I'm like the last guy who should be talking about medicals. But I don't know. It's low risk, though. But, you know, we'll see what happens, I guess. Any other thoughts on him or?
No, just excited to see him get into camp and just get acclimated to the ball club.
Yeah, I think he might end up taking Lester's number too. He's been 31 in the past.
Have they given that away since Lester left?
Yeah, Pomeranz had it.
Right. Oh my God, that's an insult.
Well, I mean, to be fair, a lot of people forget how good he was in 2017. You know, he just fell off a cliff, you know, right after that. But yeah. Go ahead.
I think they gave him 46 already.
Oh, did they?
Because Austin Bryce is wearing 31 at the moment.
Okay. Well, so they gave him Kimbrel's number. Great. Now he's really doomed. yeah. So here's another thing. I wasn't planning on mentioning this, but, you know, we did kind of blow through that McHugh part. I think the Red Sox right now might be kicking themselves for not finishing that Will Myers trade if Cal Quantrill was acquirable in that deal for a reasonable price, because you know, he was a guy who would have been a bona fide starter, you know, at least five innings. You know, so I'm just wondering if they'll go that route. Additionally, do you think there's like at least a number four level starter? Maybe you trade Bradley for, or maybe you trade Vasquez for. I've been trying to come up with scenarios, but it's really hard. You know, the Mets have a good catcher, so Vasquez isn't in play there. Bradley might be, but you did mention in the group chat earlier that if Mats was the target, the Yankees could outbid us, and you know, that's absolutely correct. They could. So I'm just, is there any scenarios right now with a non-contending team, or maybe just one that has a wealth of pitching?
No, I don't think at this point. I think every team is pretty much set with their roster. There's obviously been no devastating injuries where, you know, like a St. Louis lost Molina because he got run over in a meaningless spring game. And then they're willing to dangle a pitcher out there for a catcher. But I think what you see is what you got, other than guys off the street. I don't see any releases coming up that squads might make, especially with the 26 man this year. So, you know, you can always keep that one guy that's out of options, you know, at the back end of your roster. So I kind of think what we have right now is what we're going to have going forward. Obviously, that could change quickly with injuries, but I don't see anything happening. And I think we should probably get used to the players that are in uniform.
I agree with that. I was just racking my head amongst non-contending teams, and I can give you their number one. I couldn't tell you who their number four is, so
yeah.
I don't really feel – I feel like what we got is what we got.
Another name I liked was – well, you know, I thought was viable was Wade LeBlanc, and he was with Seattle last year, had a decent start to the year. Orioles picked him up, so I don't know how much sense it would make for them to just simply deal him when they could build up his value and then maybe trade him for you know, a mid-level guy anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, they'll trade him to a team at the deadline for a prospect that maybe that team is starting to lose a little faith in, just see if they can get a reclamation project. I think Baltimore is going to hold on to him. So, who knows? And, you know, the Sox come out of the gate pretty strong. Maybe that'll be the team we deal with and probably overpay. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know at this point.
I'm looking at Atlanta right now. That was a team that kind of came to mind. They have amazing depth, you know, with middle to back end starters. I mean, their number five guy is Felix Hernandez, who they got on a cheap 1-year deal because he's trying to get his career together. Number six on their depth chart is Sean Newcomb. Number seven is first letter is K, and the last name's Wright. I'm not familiar with him. And then number eight is Tuki Toussaint, however he pronounces it. So, but you know, they're stacked in the outfield. They got Ozuna, Acuna, and Markakis, and then Adam Duvall off the bench. Travis d'Arnaud is their starting catcher, so I don't know if Vasquez is a step up, if they'd be interested in him. But, you know, I don't know. Their bullpen isn't that great, though. Oh, actually, it is. They did. They picked up Will Smith. I forgot about that. Okay, never mind. But it's got to be a team like that that just has some depth that can do it. So, Brian Johnson could be another guy. I know that's not a sexy name, and maybe, you know, we don't want to ride that roller coaster again, but in six innings pitched, he has he's got a sub 3 ERA right now. So could be an opener type option. I don't know.
I mean, he's an innings eater. Obviously, you're not trying to expect too much from these guys, and you know, coming out in your fifth starter. So, as long as he can not wear out our young arms in the bullpen, that I'm fine with it at this point. This isn't a World Series or bust year, anyways. So, as long as he can give you maybe 120 innings this season.
The one thing that gives me faith is the Rays just figured it out. I'm just hoping to be the Rays this season of last year, you know, and sneak into that wild card.
That'd be nice. That definitely would be nice. And obviously, if it happens, it's really going to have to be on the offense. We're talking an MVP year out of Bogarts, Devers, and Martinez, which isn't out of the realm of possibility, but they're going to have to slug their way to wild card contention, in my opinion.
Tiny sample sizes here. Ryan Weber, 5 innings pitched, no earned runs. Tanner Houck, 5 innings pitched, no earned runs.
Yeah, they've looked really good. There's a good Twitter handle, Red Sox GIFs, that has some of Houck's last start, and it's like a slurve that is what they were describing as, and that thing just drops off the face of the planet. It was a great pitch. He made a few guys look really silly, so obviously they gave him a huge bonus when they picked him in the first round, so I think now might be the time. We might be seeing a full season of him. Unless, I don't know how they have to manipulate service time, but I'm sure that's only a couple weeks here and there. And obviously, you don't need all 5 starters at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I think if they hold him out until like the third week of April, then they would gain a year on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, Aaron, you're a big, you know, minor league guy. Both of you guys, admittedly, I should probably, you know, look more into that. I only know the close to major league ready guys, you know, or the, you know, the Tristan Casas type guys who, you know, are expected to be, you know, impact guys. But what is Houck's makeup? Like, what can Red Sox fans expect from him when he's on the mound?
I think he calls it a curveball, but it is more of a slurve. It's honestly, it's probably the nastiest pitch I've ever seen live. Like when he's commanding it, it's unhittable. He's got pretty good power in his fastball, but what I noticed watching him in Portland a ton was when he doesn't command his pitches, he gets hit and he gets hit hard. So it'll be something he has to figure out, and I think he will need some transition time in the MLB, so when you first see him, I don't think he's going to be that flashy or have that sub 3 ERA. I think he's going to float in the 4-5 range to start, but I think he'll figure it out. He's definitely got the stuff to make it work.
Yeah, we're talking a guy he's a big righty. He's 6'4", easily over 200 pounds. Big fastball. I think he gets up to about 98, I was seeing the other day. So obviously he's going to have to figure his stuff out, get his feet underneath him, but he's got great raw stuff. There's a reason they gave him like $2.5 million to sign with him when he did. So the kid, it's just going to be makeup, and he's got should have a pretty good future ahead of him. It's not like he's going to be picking the corners here. So he's going to try to really challenge guys and go right at him, which is nice to see instead of watching a guy nibble.
It'll be interesting. I mean, he had his role kind of switched up. They put him in the bullpen last summer. I can't remember if that was in Portland or Pawtucket, because if we were going to make the playoffs, apparently the front office thought his value would be in the bullpen. So now that he's getting stretched out a bit, I'm going to be super curious to see him pitch. And, I mean, if we're going to defy the odds and be competitive, let's say 87 plus wins, you're probably going to need a guy like Tanner Houck to kind of make an impact as a rookie to get that done. Another guy, Kyle Hart, he's got a 7.5 ERA right now. I think he might have got thumped within the last game or two, because it wasn't bad last I checked, but I did see kind of headlines that maybe he could potentially be a maybe a number five starter. But Josh Osich, it will be a reliever most likely, but 3 2/3 innings, he's looking pretty good. Yeah, Colton Brewer is having a decent start as well. So, so we'll see. I mean, if anyone emerges internally. Let's see. What was the final topic here?
Darwin.
Flip my... now I completely lost my notes. What was it? I'm so bad.
Darwin's in.
Oh, Darwin's in. Yes, I do want to get to that. Darwin's in Hernandez. I'm thinking, maybe a lot of Red Sox fans didn't really see him kind of turn it around last year, because as he was doing that, we weren't in contention. So I think a lot of people weren't really paying attention to the team. But he did kind of emerge as a late inning, potentially future dominant, setup guy, or maybe even a closer eventually. And I noticed 12 out of his last 15 appearances, he didn't give up any earned runs, but there were two appearances in those last 15 where he gave up 3 runs apiece. So it kind of blew up his, his earned run average a little bit. But there is some talk of maybe stretching him out, to maybe a few innings to be a potential opener. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I love Hernandez. And if this was 2 years,
wait, you're breaking up, buddy.
But why risk? Is it good now?
You're good now.
Oh, that's weird. I don't know if it didn't come through, but maybe it was just my passion. I hate it. I don't want to see him moved out of his role. There's no reason to make a desperation move at this point and messing around with something that was really good last year and having him in the back end. That's a serious weapon. And we've seen this in the past. Obviously, I don't think the Red Sox wanted to move Daniel Bard to a starter, but he wanted to be a starter when he was going to hit free agency the next year. And we all know how that ended, and it was ugly. So I say, don't touch him, leave him be, and just let him be a weapon. Not every guy has to be, you don't have to stretch him out. He's more valuable as a seventh and eighth guy, inning guy, than he is being a low end fifth starter, because, his stuff doesn't play up as well when you got to face the same guy a second and third time through the order.
I couldn't agree more with anything. Like, you got it spot on. He's after two innings, his stuff drops off and he doesn't command it well. And if you're seeing it once in the seventh inning or once in the eighth inning, it's going to be tough to hit. If you let him go through the lineup again, it's not going to be as tough to hit. It's just his stuff is suited as a setup guy and, in my opinion, a future closer.
Well, this is rare because I could not agree more as well. I just feel like this year is a throwaway year for the most part. I mean, maybe the stars align and we're competitive, but it's not the type of season where I'm willing to risk screwing this guy up. I can't get my words out tonight.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, you can't do it. Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned Daniel Bard. I have a feeling he was probably a little messed up before that transition. You know, we mentioned Lackey had Tommy John, so he was out that year. So, I mean, we had a slot to fill for that season, and it ended up being Bard. But he was, I kind of blame the 2011 collapse on Bard, you know, for the most part, because in the month of September, and I think it was the second half of September that year, he was brought into the game with three leads and coughed all three of them up. You know, you give us back one of those and you're at least in a game 163. So I think he was, you know, his head case issues were kind of becoming more prominent, you know, throughout that month. And then it was just crazy how he fell apart. Like, he had some bad starts, but that game against Toronto, I mean, he hit like four guys, I think, and just really lost it all in one start. And they immediately sent him back to Pawtucket, and that was essentially the end. In 2013, he did manage to get called up. He came in the ninth inning. I don't know if it was a save situation or not. That was kind of, you know, Koji Uehara didn't emerge until July of that year. You know, we thought Joel Hanrahan was going to be our closer. He went down with Tommy John. Then we're like, oh, it's fine. We got Andrew Bailey. And then he goes out with a shoulder. And then it's like, well, you know, Andrew Miller's kind of been coming on. And then he breaks his ankle. So you just, you get all the way down to Koji. But there was a brief window in there where Bard did get called up and pitched a very good inning and then got shelled the next time out and sent down. And that was literally the end. But
well, he had a terrible game yesterday. I've actually been kind of following him because the Rockies just, they signed him, and I was kind of curious to see if he was going to stick with them, but yeah, he got ridiculously shelled yesterday.
Yeah, that's so sad. And I mean, I root for the guy. I think he's got a younger brother that's pitching somewhere. Maybe he could be in the minors, but yeah, I mean, Bard's 33. Crazy that he's still that young, really.
Yeah.
And but just what a loss. And you know, getting back to Darwin's in, there's no need to screw with something that was really evolving into something great. You know, if we're in the month of August or September and we're injured and we're just trying our best to patchwork it, and you want to change his role a little bit under those circumstances, I get it. But not in April of a year we're not expected to compete by any means. So I just, and he was like coming off the mound last year, late in the season, like he had some swagger, like he was figuring it out and he knew it. And I just, what is his ceiling, you know, amongst all the great relievers? Like, do you think he could reach like Atlanta, Craig Kimbrell? Like, I would think that would be the absolute ceiling, but you know, that's obviously one of the best of our era.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if anyone became Craig Kimbrell, I mean, that's a fantastic turn of events. I don't know. He's kind of unique where I feel like it's too early to tell, because I think we can just watch him turn a corner this year. And I really don't know. Obviously, I don't think he'll be as dominant as Kimbrel, but I think we're looking at a guy that could have an ERA in the low threes if he's just a reliever.
I think he could be more dominant than that even. I mean, his his strikeout through nine rate last year was just under 17. I mean, that's
was
like,
it really that high? Okay, damn.
Yeah, his walk rate was high, but I have a feeling that was because of the start he had. His K through nine was 16.91. So just absolutely filthy stuff. And the walks, that's all part of him reining it in. And once he does, I'm just wondering, I mean, you can't compare him to Chapman because he doesn't have the velocity. I mean, Chapman was over 100 miles an hour for several years, so that's not going to be a comp. And I'm not going to even mention, I'm not going to try to put him in there with Mariano, obviously. But Papelbon was one of the better closers of our era. And, dominant. Well, I mean, he was kind of dominant.
He was pretty
dominant. Yeah. He just, I don't know. I mean, his ERA was, always around three, it seemed like. And he was prone to blowing a couple of saves here and there. But I don't know. It's been since Papelbon, really, since we've had that homegrown guy, and I think that's Darwin's in. And is Feltman gonna figure it out? Because he had a lot of hype, and we drafted him pretty high.
Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of hoping to see a little more of him during spring. I don't know if they already optioned him out because I think he's only thrown a third of an inning, so. I don't think we'll see him before July, if that, especially, if he's struggling. If he struggles this year, I think it's kind of a wrap on him because he was obviously supposed to be up last year. So I don't know. It could be one of those guys that gets moved into a deal for a crappy fifth starter because the Red Sox have lost faith in him. To get a Wade LeBlanc, and the Orioles are like, whatever, we can afford to spend some time waiting on him.
Yeah, they got Lakins from us, I think, which I can't believe we pulled the plug on him so quick. But
well, yeah, he went to the Cubs, and then they dropped him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been bouncing around a little bit.
Could be. It might be an injury, and he just can't go to a win-now team. And, I'm just guessing, but it stunned me that we got rid of him. Bloom just kind of has a mind of his own, and I'm just – hoping it really translates to something brilliant, but that remains to be seen. But Aaron, you're kind of quiet over there. What are you thinking? As far as the bullpen or prospects.
I have way less faith in Feltman than either of you. He really struggled to make that jump from Salem to Portland, and he couldn't figure it out in Portland all year. Like, I was at the point where I could almost feel confident leaving a game early with the lead if Durbin Feltman was on the mound because we were going to lose.
Oh, like, wow.
He couldn't command, and it was not good. I don't know if you guys have seen him at all. He's a non-roster invitee this year, Robinson Lair. I really like him. We got him from the Angels last year, because they dropped him. I think he has good stuff. He's never going to be a closer, but I do think he could potentially help the bullpen and be like a middle, like a not really a long relief, but like a maybe a fifth inning, sixth inning guy.
Okay, I mean, I'm not familiar with him, but I'm always intrigued when a name comes up and they get a little bit of momentum. I mean, Josh Taylor last year was a good example of that. We get him in the Marrero trade. I mean, and he ends up being pretty solid, in the second half. So, So it'll be interesting. Hopefully, though, they are identifying some long guys here, you know, if they're going to do the opener. You need at least a couple guys that can go two or three innings. And, you know, I don't know if Aucich, you know, fits that bill or whatever. We know Johnson does, but how long is he going to pitch effectively? Oh, here's one thing, though. And maybe I kind of lean on this more than a lot of people, but I really think the balls aren't going to be juiced this year. I don't think we're going to be seeing what we saw in the first half of last year. So I think some of these guys, especially the guys who only top out around 90, you know, and throw a lot of off-speed stuff, I think they're going to be able to pitch to contact again. And if that's the case, then you know, maybe we're going to be a little better than what we anticipate.
I hope so. I hope you're right there.
Yeah.
I also.
I just remember last, like, the first week of July, like, right around the time we went to London, like, at least four or five guys had 30 home runs already. You know, Bellinger was one of them. I don't know where Trout was. I don't think Mookie was quite there yet, but there were some guys right around 30 home runs. And oh, and the Mets guy there, the rookie, the polar bear, Alonso, he was up there, and I was like, geez, like seven or eight guys might break Roger Maris's record this year. How stupid is that gonna be? And you know, because you're a lot of the home runs are in July and August, you know, once the heat and humidity pick up, the balls carry more. So I'm thinking, geez, you know, they're already there halfway to 60, you know, and then nobody got there. You know, Alonso, I think, hit 53, was it, or 54, something like that, and that was the most in the majors. So I think they made a switch. And, I mean, that London series was just – utterly disgusting, just football score type, you know, runs on the board, and they were saying the stadium contributed to it, you know, because of the draft, you know, and
yeah, you had those guys over there, those fans are like, wait, Americans find this boring? It's like, no, it's not usually 19-17 in the third inning, guys. Like, trust me.
I think even in the first inning, it was like 7-7 at one point. It was just crazy. So, I mean, if the balls are relatively normal again, I think if these guys can pitch to contact again.
I think you're on to something. I don't know if you saw the link I sent you right before we hopped on, but there might be some different things going on this year. The Angels just fired their clubhouse manager of like 20-something years because he brought in a foreign substance to doctor the balls. That just happened today, this afternoon. So yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on. We might be in for a giant market correction. It's going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, I did catch a glimpse of that, and that is interesting. So it'll be – I hope they enforce it. I really do. You know, I just rather have normal baseball. I don't like fake baseball, and we got a lot of fake baseball last year. I mean, Malik Smith in the home opener against us with the Mariners crushed one, and he had only hit two home runs the year before. And this was a day in the 50s in Seattle, you know, and the balls were flying out. So, well, all right, we're right around an hour, just over actually. So I guess we can wrap. Any final thoughts, anything you guys are keeping an eye on here that is worth mentioning?
Just that, you know, one guy that's looked really good so far and gives us a little hope on, you know, a player we traded. I don't want to keep mentioning Connor Wong, looking really good so far behind the plate and at the plate. So if you can stream any games and he's playing, definitely something to keep an eye on.
Where's he going to start? Is he going to go to high A or double A?
Oh, I think he – I think he's going to be in AAA this year.
Oh, damn. All right. Look out, Christian Vasquez. Okay. Well, I mean, when you're in AA, you know, the acceleration can go quick. I mean, we've seen some guys even skip AAA. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? I'm looking it up now. SoxProspects.com has him projected to be the starter in AA Portland. So, yeah, it makes a little more sense since they do have some depth on the major league team that's obviously probably going to get optioned out. So, yeah, definitely a guy to keep an eye on. Really athletic. Threw a guy out at third his first game. I think he had a grand slam in the same game. So, exciting player to watch.
I heard that, yeah, about the grand slam. Maybe that's part of the genius to High and Bloom. Maybe he just knew something that the Dodgers didn't or just wasn't paying attention to. And, you know, because they said he hit 28 home runs last year in the minors, but he projects to be a backup. I'm like, what? you know, that sounds a little off. And if he works well with the pitching staff, I mean, geez, I mean, he could be the best catcher we've had since Jason Varitek.
And not only that, if this bat develops, he also plays second and third. So, you know, even if you want to give his knees a rest, you can throw him at second base one day if he's, you know, swinging the bat really hot.
Yeah, may as well. Yeah, Aaron, what do you got?
I'm excited to watch Erod take the ball again tomorrow. I mean, it's always entertaining to watch him pitch, and I think it's a plus, and I'm just really excited to get watch him not only tomorrow, but as the regular season baseball gets going, I'm really intrigued to see if he takes another step forward or if again, the old injury-prone Erod comes back.
Yeah, you know, and he's probably going to be the opening day starter, unless Evaldi just kills it. I guess you can make a case that Evaldi could be. I would give it to Erod personally, but yeah, and you know, he had a good year last year. I don't have his numbers up in front of me, but his high previously going into last year was 137 innings, and he blew that out of the water. I know he must have pitched at least 180, so. You know, if you can keep getting that, I mean, he could be a potential extension candidate, really. You know, so we'll see. And the one encouraging thing about him is all of his injuries have been lower body. There's been no shoulder, no elbow. It's all been mostly knee related. So, you know, if you can just kind of keep him from being too clumsy, I think, you know, he's going to be solid in the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, hope so. Just got to keep him out of his own way. Because didn't he already had a little knee scare this season, didn't he?
Yeah, and it wasn't the knee that was repaired. So I think it's just because of the fact it was Erod and there was a slight incident. You know, everybody just kind of gasps. But he seems fine, and I don't expect any real glitches. So, all right, well, I guess we'll wrap. I have to do, I think, part three with Porter on, I think, tentatively Sunday. So barring a major development, there probably won't be anything until next week. The punishments could be multiple weeks away still. So, you know, we'll just have to keep an eye on that, but you know, we'll continue to record you know, as the developments happen, which have been hot and heavy this week. So we're on March 5th, so we got 21 more days, 3 weeks. Yeah, 3 weeks from today is when the season starts.
Getting closer. So,
yeah, absolutely, have my life back. And I get the whole MLB package. I always say, because I'm a baseball only guy, you know, football does nothing for me. And, you know, winter to me is like being in prison, and opening day is my release date, you know, and then you get your life back. That's what it's like for me.
Yeah, you know, the even if the temperature doesn't change, it just feels a little bit warmer out, the sun shines a little bit brighter. It's just a much better time of year once there's, you know, first pitch happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a routine. Like, your day is, you know, every day, you know, for me, it's, you know, 7:10. So it's, what's that for you? 5:10.
Oh, it's great
out in Denver, you know, and yeah, you get to, your sleep doesn't get deprived like mine does, you know, extra innings, rain delay.
You know? I remember those Mariner games. Those were the worst. Wait until 10 p.m.
Oh, yeah. West Coast. When you're so excited for the season to start. And then last year, like, what was it? Seattle, Oakland, and Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah. That so.
Sucked. And we got thumped basically the whole time. So, yeah. All right. Well, we'll wrap. Aaron, excellent job, buddy. Glad you came on. And I'll definitely be reaching out to you, you know, as we have openings. Good job.
I appreciate it whenever you guys have me. So, thank you. I'm not professional, but I do my best.
Yeah, you hold your own. You're a Brock Holt.
Yeah, I'll take that compliment.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember that you're, you know, as good looking as he is, but, you know, close enough. Just kidding. Just kidding. I'm a fat bastard, so, you know, make fun of me all you want. Yeah, all right, guys. Have a good night.
All right. Good night, guys. Go Suns. Good night, guys.
Episode 192 in the books. Very productive. And if I'm being honest, I was not on my game in episode 191. And I feel like I gave up, you know, 6 runs in the first inning. I didn't feel good the whole last episode. Got a lot in this one. And hope you guys enjoyed it. And as I just said, we'll be back as things continue to develop. Take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.